Chapter 6. 1.
I give the letter in full. It was written from the S.Y. Mermaid, lying in Monaco Harbour. My dear Peter, where's Ogden? We've been expecting him every day. Mrs. Ford is worrying herself to death. She keeps asking me if I have any news, and it is very tiresome to have to keep telling her that I've not heard from you. Surely, with the opportunities you must get every day, you can manage to kidnap him. Do be quick. We're relying on you. In haste, Cynthia. I read this brief and business-like communication several times during the day, and after dinner that night, in order to meditate upon it in solitude, I left the house and wandered off in the direction of the village. I was midway between house and village when I became aware that I was being followed. The night was dark, and the wind moving in the treetops emphasized the loneliness of the country road. Both time and place were such as made it peculiarly unpleasant to hear stealthy footsteps on the road behind me. Uncertainty in such cases is the unnerving thing. I turned sharply and began to walk back on tiptoe in the direction from which I'd come. I'd not been mistaken. A moment later a dark figure loomed up out of the darkness, and the exclamation which greeted me as I made my presence known showed that I'd taken him by surprise. There was a momentary pause. I expected the man, whoever he might be, to run, but he held his ground. Indeed, he edged forward. "Get back!" I said, and allowed my stick to rasp suggestively on the road before raising it in readiness for any sudden development. It was as well that he should know it was there. The hint seemed to wound rather than frighten him. "Ah, cut out the rough stuff, Bo," he said reproachfully in a cautious, husky undertone. "I ain't going to start anything." I had an impression that I'd heard the voice before, but I could not place it. "What are you following me for?" I demanded. "Who are you?"
"Say, I want to talk with you. I took a slant at you under the lamppost back there, and I seen it was you, so I tagged along. Say, I'm wise to your game, sport."
I had identified him by this time, unless there were two men in the neighborhood of Sandstead who hailed from the Bowery. This must be the man I'd seen at the Feathers, who had incurred the disapproval of Miss Bengerfield. "I haven't the faintest idea what you mean," I said. "What is my game?" His voice became reproachful again.
"Ah, gee," he protested. "Quit your kidding. What was you rubbing around the house for last night if you wasn't trailing the kid?"
"Was it you who ran into me last night?" I asked.
"Gee, I thought it was a tree. I came near taking the count."
"I did take it. You seemed in a great hurry."
"Hell,"
said the man simply, and expectorated.
"Say,"
he resumed, having delivered this criticism on that stirring episode,
"that's a great kid, that nugget. I thought it was a black hand soup explosion when he cut loose. But say, let's don't waste time. We gotta get together about that kid."
"Certainly, if you wish it. What do you happen to mean?"
"Ah, quit your kidding."
He expectorated again. He seemed to be a man who could express the whole gamut of emotions by this simple means.
"I know you."
"Then you have the advantage of me, though I believe I remember seeing you before. Weren't you at the Feathers one Wednesday evening singing something about a dog?"
"Sure, that was me."
"What do you mean by saying that you know me?"
Quit your kidding, Sam."
There was, it seemed to me, a reluctantly admiring note in his voice. "Tell me, who do you think I am?" I asked patiently.
"Why, gee, you can't string me, sport. Smooth Sam Fisher is who you are, Bo. I know you."
I was too surprised to speak. "Verily, some have greatness thrust upon them."
"I ain't never seen you, Sam," he continued, "but I know it's you, and I'll tell you how I doped it out. To begin with, there ain't but you and your bunch and me and my bunch that knows the little nuggets on this side at all. They sneaked him out of New York mighty slick, and I heard that you had come here after him. So when I runs into a guy that's trailing the kid down here, well, who's it gonna be if it ain't you's? And when that guy talks like a dude, like they all say you do, well, who's it gonna be if it ain't you's? So quit your kidding, Sam, and let's get down to business."
"Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Buck McGinnis?" I said. I felt convinced that this could be no other than that celebrity.
"That's right. There's no need to keep up anything with me, Sam. We're both on the same trail, so let's get down to it."
"One moment," I said. "Would it surprise you to hear that my name is Burns, and that I'm a master at the school?" He expectorated admirably.
"Hell no," he said. Gee, it's just what you would be, Sam. I always heard you had been one of these rah-rah boys on Zest. Say, it's mighty smart of you to be a professor. You're right in on the ground floor.
His voice became appealing.
Say, Sam, don't be a hog. Let's go 50-50 in this deal. My bunch and me has come a hell of a number of miles on this proposition, and there ain't no need for us to fall scrapping over it. There's plenty for all of us. Old man Ford'll cough up enough for everyone. And there won't be any fuss. Let's sit in together on this nug setting. It ain't like as if it was an ordinary 2x4 deal. I wouldn't ask yous if it wasn't big enough for the whole bunch of us.
As I said nothing, he proceeded.
It ain't square, Sam, to take advantage of your having education. If it was a square fight and us both with the same chance, I wouldn't say. But you've been a dude professor and getting right into the place like that ain't right. Say, don't be a hog, Sam. Don't swipe it all. 50-50, does that go?
I don't know, I said. You'd better ask the real Sam. Good night. I walked past him and made for the school gates at my best pace. He trotted after me, pleading.
Sam, give us a quarter then.
I walked on.
Sam, don't be a hog!
He broke into a run.
Sam!
His voice lost its pleading tone and rasped menacingly.
Gee, if I had me canister, yous wouldn't be so flip. Listen here, you big cheese. You think yous is the only thing inside, huh? Well, we ain't done yet. You'll see yet. We'll fix you. Yous had best watch out.
I stopped and turned on him. Look here, you fool, I cried. I tell you, I am not Sam Fisher. Can't you understand that you have got hold of the wrong man? My name is Burns. Burns. He expectorated, scornfully this time. He was a man slow by nature to receive ideas, but slower to rid himself of one that had contrived to force its way into what he probably called his brain. He had decided on the evidence that I was smooth Sam Fisher, and no denials on my part were going to shake his belief. He looked on them merely as so many unsportsmanlike quibbles prompted by greed.
"Tell it to Sweeney,"
was the form in which he crystallized his scepticism.
"Maybe you'll say yous ain't trailing the nugget, huh?"
It was a home thrust. If truth-telling has become a habit, one gets slowly off the mark when the moment arrives for the prudent lie. Quite against my will, I hesitated. Observant Mr. McGinnis perceived my hesitation and expectorated triumphantly.
"Ah, gee,"
he remarked, and then with a sudden return to ferocity.
"All right, you, Sam, you wait. We'll fix you and fix you good. See? That goes. You think yous can put it across us, huh? All right, you'll get yours. You wait."
And with these words, he slid off into the night. From somewhere in the murky middle distance came a scornful, "Hog!" And he was gone, leaving me with a settled conviction that, while I had frequently had occasion, since my expedition to Sandstead began, to describe affairs as complex, their complexity had now reached its height. With a watchful Pinkerton's man within, and a vengeful gang of rivals without, Sandstead House seemed likely to become an unrestful place for a young kidnapper, with no previous experience. The need for swift action had become imperative. 2. White, the butler, looking singularly unlike a detective, which I suppose is how a detective wants to look, was taking the air on the football field when I left the house next morning for a before-breakfast stroll. The sight of him filled me with a desire for first-hand information on the subject of the man Mr. McGinnis supposed me to be, and also of Mr. McGinnis himself. I wanted to be assured that my friend Buck, despite appearances, was a placid person whose bark was worse than his bite. White's manner at our first conversational exchanges was entirely that of the butler. From what I came to know of him later, I think he took an artistic pride in throwing himself into whatever role he had to assume. At the mention of smooth Sam Fisher, however, his manner peeled off him like a skin, and he began to talk as himself, a racy and vigorous self, vastly different from the Episcopal person he thought it necessary to be when on duty. "Right," I said, "do you know anything of smooth Sam Fisher?" He stared at me. I suppose the question, led up to by no previous remark, was unusual. "I met a gentleman of the name of Buck McGinnis. He was our visitor that night, by the way, and he was full of Sam. Do you know him?
Buck?
Either of them.
Well, I've never seen Buck, but I know all about him. There is Pepper to Buck.
So I should imagine. And Sam?
You may take it from me that there's more pepper to Sam's little finger than there is to Buck's whole body. Sam could make Buck look like the last run of shad if it came to a showdown. Buck's just a common roughneck. Sam's an educated man. He's got brains.
So I gathered. Well, I'm glad to hear you speak so well of him, because that's who I'm supposed to be.
How's that?
Buck McGinnis insists that I am Smooth Sam Fisher. Nothing I can say will shift him.
White stared. He had very bright, humorous brown eyes. Then he began to laugh.
"Well, what do you know about that?"
he exclaimed. "Wouldn't that jar you?"
"It would. I may say it did. He called me a hog for wanting to keep the little nugget to myself, and left threatening to fix me. What would you say the verb to fix signified in Mr. McGinnis's vocabulary?"
White was still chuckling quietly to himself.
"He's a wonder," he observed. "Can you beat it, taking you for Smooth Sam?"
He said he'd never seen Smooth Sam. "Have you?"
"Lord, yes."
"Does he look like me?"
"Not a bit."
"Do you think he's over here in England?"
"Sam? I know he is."
"Then Buck McGinnis was right?"
"Dead right, as far as Sam being on the trail goes. Sam's after the nugget to get him this time. He's tried often enough before, but we've been too smart for him. This time he allows he's going to bring it off."
"Then why haven't we seen anything of him? Buck McGinnis seems to be monopolizing the kidnapping industry in these parts."
"Oh, Sam will show up when he feels good and ready. You can take it from me that Sam knows what he's doing. Sam's a special pet of mine. I don't give a flip for Buck McGinnis."
"I wish I had your cheery disposition. To me, Buck McGinnis seems a pretty important citizen. I wonder what he meant by fix."
White, however, declined to leave the subject of Buck's more gifted rival.
"Sam's a college man, you know. That gives him a pull. He has brains and can use them."
"That was one of the points on which Buck McGinnis reproached me. He said it was not fair to use my superior education."
He laughed.
"Buck's got no sense. That's why you find him carrying on like a porch climber. It's his only notion of how to behave when he wants to do a job. And that's why there's only one man to keep your eye on in this thing of the little nugget, and that's Sam. I wish you could get to know Sam. You'd like him."
"You seem to look on him as a personal friend."
"I certainly don't like Buck."
"Oh, Buck," said White scornfully. We turned towards the house as the sound of the bell came to us across the field.
"Then you think we may count on Sam's arrival sooner or later as a certainty?" I said.
"Surest thing you know."
"You will have a busy time."
"All in the day's work."
"I suppose I ought to look at it in that way. But I do wish I knew exactly what Buck meant by fix."
White at last condescended to give his mind to the trivial point.
"I guess he'll try to put one over on you with a sandbag," he said carelessly.
He seemed to face the prospect with calm.
"A sandbag, eh?" I said. "Sounds exciting."
"And feels it. I know. I've had some."
I parted from him at the door. As a comforter, he had failed to qualify. He had not eased my mind to the slightest extent.